Okay, we are, as a Business, Labor, and Economic Development Committee is now open. We will start today, seeing how no one else is here yet, with a public hearing on Senate Bill 194. Seeing how the banks were late getting to the committee, we will...
I can reschedule this for August, Mr. Chairman.
Senate Bill 194, Mr. Putnam, you give us a very, very brief update while Mr. Miller is preparing his testimony.
194, as it currently stands, simply allows a process server to serve a notice by which property has to be given back to an evicted tenant. But I understand there will be amendments.
Thank you. Please, John.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller, I represent the Oregon Rental Housing Association. Senate Bill 194 is going to be the this year's landlord-tenant omnibus bill, and this is something we've done probably for the last, I'd say, 12 legislative sessions, where we negotiate with the tenant groups, legal aid, and the landlord groups all get together for, it's been now a little over a year, and negotiate all the changes to Chapter 90, the landlord-tenant statute. It's something that we do on our own outside the building and fight and negotiate and come up with a consensus bill so we don't have to do it here in the halls of the Capitol. So 194, as stands, it was the placeholder. This was the first item that we all agreed to. It's a technical change. It's something that has been current practice, but we wanted to clarify the language to allow this to happen, dealing with process servers. So in the next 2-3 weeks, we're probably going to have completed all of the amendments, and we'll come to the committee, the whole group, all the landlord groups and the tenant groups, explain the changes, and we will be able then to go through it then. So probably another few weeks.
Thank you. So Sean, the way I understand it, my bill, which was a simple 26-line bill introduced by me, is going to grow.
Mr. Chair, it's going to get bigger, but it's not going to be too big. Traditionally, the landlord-tenant omnibus bill has been a large bill in the past. This year, we've focused more on technical and not tackle big policy items, and so we do are going to have a smaller bill this session than in the past, so that's the good news.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 194. Open public hearing on Senate Bill 186. Yeah, it looks like we've generated a lot of interest today. Mr. Putnam, you'd like to bring us up to date here and what happened on this one?
You want me to go look for sign-up sheets, Mr. Chairman?
It appears we wouldn't need to do that. I guess, did we notify Senator Hannon that his bill was up?
No, I didn't.
No. I don't know, indeed.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, this bill corrects an oversight from amendments in the last session of the legislature. Federal banks are excluded by the current language, and this takes care of that by bringing in any operating institution, which would include any bank doing business in Oregon.
Okay, we are now a full committee. Go ahead, Mr. Martinez.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tim Martinez. I'm Vice President of Government Relations for the Oregon Bankers Association. I won't read to you what Mr. Putman has ably summarized, but that's indeed what happened. Senate Bill 839 from the last session was a bill we introduced and successfully worked through the process that gave direction to banks, savings and loans, credit unions as to what to do with safe deposit boxes when the last owner buys. Up until that point, there was no language, there was no statute on how you dealt with that, and we were running into trouble trying to decide who should have access to these boxes. Even though this bill was at the request of the Oregon Bankers Association for U.S. National Bank, we inadvertently used the wrong definition, and national banks were excluded. I'm happy to tell you that everybody on the dais, as well as everybody in the building in the last session, voted in favor of this bill in 1999, and Senate Bill 186 before you today will just simply include national banks. I'd end my testimony there and take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Harper.
So this Oregon operating, that means everything dealing with, and that clears it up.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Harper, yes. Oregon operating institution is actually a defined term in 706.
Here it is, Mayor. Thank you.
Any further questions?
No, I'm sorry.
Pam, do you want to testify? All right. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 186. We'll close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 186.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bortley.
Ready for a motion?
I would love it.
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 186 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Gordley moves Senate Bill 186 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Mr. Putman.
Any statement of conflict?
We'll probably get to that when we get to the a vote on it. I assume you may have it.
I do.
Okay. For your note on our staff measure summary, it says may have fiscal impact, but no statement issued yet. We have been notified that there is no fiscal impact. So that's correct, Ms. Putman.
Correct.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would like to declare a potential conflict of interest. I serve on the board of directors of the Albina Community Bank in Portland, Oregon.
So noted. With that, is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, motion carries. Senator Atkinson is excused, and Senator Corcoran is absent. I guess he haven't heard from him. So, would anyone like to volunteer to carry the bill?
I know Senator Corcoran often talks about this issue a lot and seems to really like it. So he might be interested. I'm not confident of that.
Without checking the rules, I know he's not able to sign on to a minority report if he's not here. Is he able to carry a bill if he's not here?
Senator Hannon could carry it.
It is Senator Hannon's bill, but normally it's, and I, once again, normally the member of the committee will carry the bill. Nobody else wants to. I'll carry the bill. I'll carry the first bill out of our committee.
Right.
Be happy to carry a bill for the banking industry. We will, that will close the work session on Senate Bill 186. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 320. And let Mr. Putman shuffle his papers here.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Courtney threatened his life if we had to spend much more time with limited liability companies and limited liability partnerships and others, but this bill adds that language to the list of businesses that the Construction Contractors Board can penalize if they violate construction contractor law or regulation. I believe this, too, was an oversight in prior legislation of not listing them. And I believe their language, the way they have it now, states that, or an other business in which an individual is a member. So hopefully we wouldn't have to do this as we change, or possibly would in the future change the way business is organized.
Thank you. I'd just like to note that, in case Senator Harper didn't notice it, that the Senate Bill 186 did not have an emergency clause. One of the first ones I've seen this session without an emergency clause. Mr. Cadell, go ahead and make sure you include what the emergency is in your testimony.
Yes. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Ken Cudell. I'm the administrator of Construction Contractors Board and the Landscape Contractors Board. Senate Bill 320, in my written testimony, I've indicated the authority that we already have, and this is always a tough one. Do you have a copy of
the testimony?
We have authority to say to a corporation or a partnership or a sole proprietor that if you want to come in and have unpaid claims or unpaid court orders or basically anything associated with construction unpaid, and want to come back in as a corporation or a partnership or a sole proprietor, we're going to hold you responsible for the debts of that other company. And unfortunately, our attorney tells us all the time that the legislature knows how to say LLC and LLP, and they didn't say it, so therefore we don't have authority to do the same with a limited liability company or limited liability partnership. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, the entity of preferred entity for new construction businesses is limited liability companies. And so right now we have 12 companies that should not have been allowed to have their license, and they owe a total of about $190,000 in, and it's all in claims, final order claims. If 320 passes and is signed into law, at that point we would notify these 12 companies that they either have to take care of those debts, get the individual who's who was a member of that or owner of that company off of their company, either pay the debts, get that individual out, or we take away the license. So we can't stop a company from proceeding if they want to take the individual who was part of that other company off of their company. But we can stop them if that individual continues to be an owner, or could if Senate Bill 320 passes. So that's what it would do. And the reason for the emergency clause is just that. We have a few people who are very angry at what they lost, and then a company in Silverton that was able to come back in and become licensed again under a limited liability company after leaving several unpaid claims.
Okay. Senator Harper.
Can we be retroactive like this?
I was wondering the same thing, and that's...
Well, Mr. Chairman, the law says they can be placed on probation if three or more claims are filed against the board within a 12-month period. And so that seems to me any 12 months. That was at least why I didn't see a red flag when I saw the emergency clause.
I would have to check with their attorneys on that, Chair Byron, but I believe the way this is worded is in the first section is that we may suspend the license of a corporation or partnership when the business owes another debt. The debt was owed somewhat earlier than that, but I don't think that's retroactive. But I would certainly check with our attorneys before we took action.
Well, I think it would behoove us to, with someone, to check with attorneys before we took action. Mm-hmm. And
you don't want it to be retroactive?
Well, I guess it's... to me, that puts in a different light that it's, you know, we are taking people who, you know, we're saying that you're going to suspend a license of a business because of something that business hasn't done, but someone who's in that business did prior. And I would think that, I don't know, it's just that makes it a little more gray than the black and white that that I saw before you said that. Another question I would have is, currently you list our the different types of businesses we recognize in the state of Oregon, but a year from now or 2 years from now, if another business entity is brought forward that's not in this laundry list, they would then be exempt also. Could we, rather than say it this way, just put in any in, or to take out all of the reference of business types and just say any business or individual who is an owner? And because I recognize you say or any business in which the individual is an owner, but I also know that the courts seem to say that if you have a laundry list in statute and there is something that's not in that list, then it's excluded even if you put other words in. Is that, that's what I've been told?
Chair Byer, we worked with the legislative council, and it was their advice that our other business would do the trick in this. That's the problem we have today. It's very specific where it says partnership, corporation, or sole proprietor. So when it specifically says those and mentions nothing else, we're stuck. And so in this case, they've added limited liability company, limited liability partnerships, and or any other business.
Okay. Well, I mean, I understand, but I don't know if that's going to, if another business entity comes along, hopefully it would cover it. I'm just trying to make sure that it would.
It would be our preference that the bill allows us to go retroactive, but even if it doesn't, we've got a hole that we need to plug in some way, because more people are going to come this direction, and all of the attorneys in the state of Oregon know that this is a way that somebody can come in without having to pay their debts for their previous company. And
okay. Any further questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much. It would be very helpful to have some additional information. The summary of the 12 cases that you reference in your letter is something that I would like to see, just so I have the full picture of what it is where...
I have the names and addresses and everything with me if you would like those. I wasn't sure how I ought to do that sort of thing, so... But I do have them with me.
You have more than one copy?
I have a dozen copies.
Well, we'd be happy to have them distributed then.
Did you say that was a summary or just the names and addresses today?
Well, we'll soon see if we need more. Any other questions of Ken while we're waiting for this? We have somebody else in the room. I assume the way you ran in, you want to testify in this bill. Are you with him?
I'm supporting the bill.
Well, why don't you come on up and give us your name for the record and get your testimony on the record while we're looking at this information.
I promised your wife I'd limit my testimony to about 5 minutes.
That's her choice, I guess. We don't have any limit here, so... Can't. So go ahead and state your name for the record and
I'll
start in.
My name is Mel Stewart. I live at 5180 Zozel Avenue South in Salem, Oregon. I'm here to support Senate Bill 320. Let me first say that I appreciate the efforts of Ken Cadell in coming up with a solution to this problem and the time he's been put in working with legislative counsel to come up with an appropriate fix. Many years ago, I worked my way through college as a licensed general contractor. At that point in time, I was also a member of the Oregon Home Builders Association and very proud. In general, most building contractors are regulated primarily by good sense and common decency. Regrettably, there are some building contractors that aren't. And that's why this piece of legislation is required. Some time ago, one of my family members was taken advantage of by one of the building contractors, one of the 12 that you'll see on this list. The building contractor diverted roughly $100,000 out of a construction loan, leaving many subcontractors unpaid, ultimately leaving the house uncompleted and then walking away, leaving my family member to have to step in and solve all the problems. We instituted litigation in that regard. I now hold an uncollectible judgment. One of the things we suggested to the subcontractors that were unpaid is that they file claims with the Builders Board. When we checked with the Builders Board, we were surprised to find that the Builders Board was already aware of the builder and that they were in the process of removing his license. The board, at that point in time, was working on claim number 138. As a former building contractor myself, I have no idea how somebody gets to claim number 138. In my 5 years as a building contractor, I never had a single claim. So I think you're talking about a few building contractors that grossly abuse the system, where most building contractors, I think, act responsibly through their entire career and their entire lives. when we did a debtor's examination of this building contractor, he testified in his debtor's examination that he had 160 pending legal actions. After the Builders Board removed his license, approximately 6 months later, he wound up with a new contractor's license. And this came, of course, as you might imagine, it came as quite a shock to us when we called him that he was back in business again. And what makes it even more offensive from a consumer standpoint is now this gentleman goes out to other people. He shows them his contractor's license number. They call the state of Oregon. He's got a clean slate. You know, we're a little bit surprised sometimes when the state of Oregon doesn't protect the consumer's interest, but here you have, you know, the state of Oregon participating in a fraud. We'd appreciate anything you can do to, you know, to fix this problem. From a builder standpoint, it doesn't benefit, you know, legitimate builder's interest. It doesn't benefit subcontractors. It doesn't benefit consumers to have people up there, out there abusing the public's interest. And I don't know the legal technicalities of the bill and how it works, and I defer to legislative counsel, but anything you could do to solve this problem and get these people that have been grossly abusing the public's trust out of business, I'd appreciate your help. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming forward with the information. Any further questions?
Well, hang on. This problem you have with this company, did he relicense as an LLC?
Yes, that's exactly what he did.
Is his name on here?
I'm sure it is.
What's his name?
Number 4.
That's number 4.
Yeah, and
that's the problem. So he relicensed and everything is his story.
In one case, he took $80,000 from an elderly couple, 85 years old, and they were actually wound up getting a foreclosure notice on their house, on their retirement home. Their children had to step in and make up the funds. Otherwise, you know.
Let me just ask a question, and I don't know if there's an answer. Why did you guys relicense this individual if you knew who it was? Or did you have that, were you aware of it? Why'd you let this loophole to take place, I guess, is the question, huh?
Chair Beyer, Senator Harper, up until, during the last legislative session, we were of the assumption that our authority was broad enough to deny this.
Okay.
So we didn't take care of it last time. It was an error on our part.
So this interpretation just took place between then and this guy
here.
160. Name as we have it upstairs.
This interpretation.
It's interpreted wrong. Get yourself another lawyer.
Unfortunately, we didn't ask our lawyer for an interpretation, and that's what our problem was. We should have gone for advice earlier and did not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions to help clarify the information in front of me. Can you decode in the fourth column the CW, OW, and SP? What are those initials?
The OW is an owner claim. SP is a subclaim. CW is not a CCB claim. That's a court decision. And the MS is a material supplier claim. One other thing I should decode for you also is if you look at the former inactive license and then you see down below a number.
Yes.
If you look at the number 4 company, you'll see that they went from number 136. They've been around a long time. And their new company over in the first, the second column, but the column went from to number 145,835. So they recently registered, they took a new number.
Mm-hmm.
Most companies, when they come back, want to keep their old number.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously these did not. And by the way, that the contractor does not have 138 claims. The 100 is the beginning point, so he does have 38, and that is a lot of claims.
Oh. And then one follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. How old are these claims, 1 through 12, each of them?
Chair Byer, Senator Gordley, all of these cases would, or the claims themselves would be perhaps as many as a year, 2 years old. I would think nothing much beyond that. But all of these cases are cases that where people have come in the last year or roughly there, come in and become licensed as a limited liability company. The company has, but they had previous claims, and most of these claims, the reason they would have left their other company was they had claims. And so I'm just estimating, but somewhere probably no more than about 2 years old.
Okay. Thank you.
Candy, when your numbers here, are those just random numbers or sequential? Or, I mean, how do you come up with this numbering system?
The numbering system from the contractor registration number?
Yes.
That's just sequential. We're in an industry where about 6,000 to 7,000 a year go, 7,000 go into business and 6,000 go out. So from the starting point, we have nothing close to 145,000 contractors. We do have 45,000 licensed contractors, however, today.
So I guess I'm curious to know, like number 12, we have a number 62,425 as a new number, but its old number, which the claims are against, is 107,083. So you don't just keep going up, you recycle numbers? Or was Butler and Butler LLC in existence before Butler Construction Company?
One was in existence before the other, and they just dropped back to that company is what occurred in this case.
So if we were to do something retroactively, that Butler and Butler LLC would then become liable for things that Butler Construction Company did prior to that, we may be sticking a partner of Butler and Butler with some debts that person has not done anything to bring forward except for to bring in another Butler as a partner. But he already had that person as a partner prior to. Do you understand what I'm saying? By making this retroactive, we may be putting this liability on people who it's not really, you know, responsible to.
Yeah. Chair Byer, I do understand that, but even if you made it where it was just for cases from today forward, you would still have that same situation. So what you've got is the individual who was part of the company that created the debts. The new company has either got to take care of those debts or they've got to get that individual out of their company.
But at least if we did it from this time forward, the new company would know that going into it, that I've got this person in my company that if I accept them in my company or if I start a company with this person or get a license with this person, I'm going to owe $66,000 before I can even operate. And I don't know if that's the case in all of these, but, you know, obviously that's the largest one here for a monetary amount, but you know, we could be putting debts of, you know, people who know nothing about this onto this. I don't know if that's the case or not. I don't know who these new partners are, but potentially they went into business in good faith with someone, not knowing that person had, you know, thousands of dollars in back debts, and now all of a sudden this new company is saddled with debts of this former person, and I don't know how fair that is to the other business partners.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Corcoran.
Maybe we could, that's a good question. Are you allowed to discuss the particulars of an individual that you have here?
Chair Byer, Senator Corcoran, everything we have is an open record.
Public record.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Chair, if I could then, was Tim Botcher was a, Timothy Butler was a partner, was a member in the Butler & Butler LLC.
Currently is.
Well,
that's the active.
My point is that 60. If he was 62,425, then you know 40,000 licenses ago, they formed as Butler & Butler LLC, and then at a later time, Butler Construction Company was formed. Same Butler. Is that correct?
The scenario on this one, Chair Butler, the scenario on this one is probably that Butler and Butler was there. They went away from that to Butler Construction Company, and when it had the huge debt, then they went back to Butler and Butler LLC.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I guess I just asked, and I suppose we could go through each one, but the question of retroactivity is that this is simply moving a name to be allowed to practice again. This has nothing to do with retroactivity.
Well,
an ongoing cost. Now, I think your scenario is if person C goes into partnership with a previous person A and B, person A and B shouldn't be liable for person C liability.
Unless they, and you know, to do this from this point forward, so if they know that person has that liability and still goes into business with them, I can, you know, then they certainly would be liable for that. But if they didn't know that, so I guess I would be interested in seeing more information about each of these 12 cases, if that's possible, Ken, to get us some more history about dates of how, you know, when they went into business. If it's only, if it's the same person, all they did was change their name, that's one thing, you know, that shouldn't be allowed. But if they do, you know, joined another company or something like that, and you'd be saddling innocent people, so to speak, with the debts of their partner, I'd just like to know that, I guess, before I do that, if that's what we ultimately end up doing.
So, Mr. Chair, then what you would be asking him to provide is in the first row of the licensees, the names of the other partners.
Other partners, if there are some, and when each of these groups was formed, if the LLC was formed after the, you know, the, well, this, in this case, it's an LLC, they're both LLCs, number one, but I guess the sequence of when these events happened would be very helpful.
Chair Butler, I can do that, but what you're going to see from this is in all cases, the debt, in all cases, even number 12, the debt was incurred prior to the creation of or the recreation of the LLC. The debt was incurred by the other company. Now, in some cases, there will be other owners. In some cases, there will be only the one owner. In the case that we're talking about in number 4, I think you'll find 12 or 13 people there, but the primary principal is the individual that once that company created and the others are there, but the primary person is the individual we've got listed in the individual link column, and that's who this gentleman has been speaking of. There are at least, I believe, 6 or 7 other people involved in that company.
Were there also 6 or 7 other people involved in the original company, I guess, would be, and are they the same 6 or 7 people?
The only person that we have is the length is the individual we've shown there. So the others were not. It was a family corporation prior to this occurring.
And Timothy was in both, but no one else was.
He's talking about this one now.
I'm on number 4.
Pfeiffer.
He's the only one that was in that's in both.
Was in both.
Yes.
But there were other people. There were other people involved, not just Eugene Pfeiffer.
It was a family corporation, so there were other people involved, but they're no longer, they're not involved with the new company.
We've litigated this thing, so we've done the depositions and everything. Historically, license number 136 was issued to a John A. Pfeiffer, who is a man of honor, a man of integrity. He died about 3 years ago, and his son took over the business. And that's when things went to pieces. And thereafter, Gene Pfeiffer became the sole.
We're looking for, if it is retroactive, is one question.
Mm-hmm.
If it is retroactive, are there going to be any innocent parties hurt by that retroactive?
That's my
question. That's all we really need to know.
You also have a problem if you don't make it retroactive. There's a lot of new victims that you might find in the future.
That's exactly right.
So there is a...
Got it.
I have briefly discussed this with the Home Builders Association, and in my limited conversation before the legislature, they had no objection to this. I did discuss it with Oregon Manufactured Housing, Don Miner. He supports the bill. and my legislator, Dean Drickler.
That's the only question we have. Yeah. Is from innocent parties, is a mistake.
And that's Ken, if you could get that information for us, it'd be just good to have the, I guess, and it should be public information, I guess, who all the principals of these 12 companies are, both old companies and current active, LLC companies.
Mm-hmm.
That would be helpful to have that information. Okay. So, and then also, we do need to clarify that this is retroactive and to the extent thereof.
Or not. Yeah.
If it is, to the extent thereof. And I don't know if the council should answer that question.
Well, you've got Senator Gordley.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. I'm just wondering if retroactive is the correct word.
Yeah.
Maybe it isn't. From what I understand, if the legislation passes, that then gives you the authority to suspend the licenses of those folks who currently owe money, period. That's what it allows you to do, and that's the authority that you're looking for.
That's what I'm looking for.
Okay. And looking further, Mr. Chair, I see that some of the other state or local agencies that are affected, and I'm looking now at the sheet that is titled Legislative Concept. The Attorney General is in favor of the bill.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
The Oregon Remodeling Association.
Yes.
And the Oregon Building Industry Association, all in favor. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Corker.
Yes. I mean, Mr. Chair, I think Senator Gordley was getting at a good point, and that is, the use of the term retroactive. I mean, this is basically trying to it sounds like if we don't allow these guys to do this, we're allowing people to transfer out of a debt and still maintain a license and still be able to commit inappropriate behavior from a consumer's perspective. And that really doesn't have anything to do with retroactively. All this would do is put on notice if you go into, a guy comes into partnership with you that has a debt, that he's got to either get out of that partnership with you or clear the debt. And I think that's a reasonable thing to...
And I agree with that concept, except for if we have some innocent parties in these groups that didn't know about that.
They can just remove the offending party. That's all they have to do. They can reorganize.
Chair Byer, what typically happens in a case like this is if you've got a company that's primarily one individual, then they don't have any choice but to pay the bill or get out of business. But if it's a company that's made up of three or four or five people and there's one party that's causing the problems, they buy that party out or they get him out of their company. That's how they do this. So the company still is there, and we might say, well, maybe there's still some cloud on the company. But at least we haven't stood by and let somebody who owes some money from past experience continue to operate as a contractor. And that's what we're trying to do.
And that doesn't, and you're not even taken away from the livelihood of that person that has the debt, because that person could go to work, as an employee, presumably, of that contractor if he or she was removed from the partnership. But they just simply wouldn't have the ability to advertise themselves as a contractor and get the bonding and so forth. It seems like a pretty good consumer bill to me.
Can you start?
I believe that this is a good bill, personally. But I think that what the good senator from South and from Portland has suggested.
That's the north
about,
and the south taken care of here.
Yeah. I got a, I guess, Cottage Grove.
Cottage Grove's great.
Is that close?
Cabbage Grove, Garbage Grove, anything
anywhere
you want to call it.
Anyway,
yeah.
My sense is that there is potential here for financial hardship on the partners, that you don't just back out of an agreement with somebody because of this requirement of the law, that without potential of some kind of, well, you suggested buying the partner out. That's a financial burden. And my might not, under the contractual arrangement, might not be easily done. I guess where I am, I certainly want to support this legislation. I think it's a great consumer piece of legislation. I'd like to just know who's involved here and a little more information before we proceed.
We just need to find out whether we have a problem or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
maybe I'll moot point.
And that's my.
Well, you got a problem. You know, you got a problem right now in this space.
There's no problem about whether you have innocent people that would be brought in.
Well, I think you almost, Mr. Chair, I think you almost have to assume that you're going to have that situation. But I think their point is that that person shouldn't be allowed. The only thing that this bill effectively does is that person can't act as a contractor. I think that's really, at the end of the day.
But so would his innocent partner.
That's. But, you know, the partner is neither innocent nor guilty. The partner just has to know that if they're doing, you know, business with somebody that has this debt, that's got to be satisfied. You know, I don't see that. I mean, it just seems like a sham. Otherwise, if you could just keep moving around, somebody's always going to be innocent because unless they're both in debt.
You know, we've made raised good points here. We are in a public hearing, not in a work session on the bill. It is the second week of the session, or maybe it's the third, I don't know. But I don't think we're going to be gone, you know, from this building or from this process, unfortunately.
I thought committees were shutting down on Friday, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair.
Are they? Well, I certainly hope so.
Senator Gerfer said.
It's not going to hurt this process or this bill to get more information that we've asked for, so we do know what decision what we're making when we make that decision. Unless then we had one more in here. There's an HO on here.
Yeah.
Ken, is that homeowner on your number and type of unpaid CCBs? What is HO?
It's HO. Number 12.
The number 12 down there says 1HO.
It should be that. That should have been a OW. Owner claim is that somebody put the wrong one on there.
So that owner claim. OW.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll clarify that.
Okay. So you're going to get us more information, get it to Mr. Putman, and he'll get it to the rest of the committee members. And thank you for taking time today to come in and talk to us about this issue. We will do something to resolve it. I think
Does
anyone else want to testify in the bill?
Throw legal. Thank you. Numbers.
We will close the public hearing.
We think it's
20. 320.
We think the women in new fields.
So we had a 43-minute committee meeting today and had a meeting last Friday. Let's figure out our time here, Mr. Chair.
I was going to make the offer to allow Senator Corcoran to vote on the bill that we moved out. But
I would like to vote on that.
Maybe I'll change my mind.
I'm happy to vote on
that. Senator Corcoran, would you move suspension of the rules to allow Senator Corcoran to vote on Senate Bill 186?
Mr. Chair, I move suspension of the rules to allow Senator Courtney to cast his vote on Senate Bill 186.
Senator Gordley moves suspension of the rules to allow Senator Courtney to vote on Senate Bill 186. Any objection? Hearing none.
The only objection I have is that I'm Senator Corcoran, and Senator Courtney is that other old, ugly Irish guy.
Yeah.
And I will vote for Senator Corcoran, and will vote aye. Thank you. Senator Carter now, that would have been another mistake. Senator Gordon, thank you very much. I have this cultural sensitivity and bugging the heck out.
Senator Corcoran votes aye. Without anything else, on Wednesday, I believe we're going to have another. Mr. Putman, why don't you?
On Wednesday, we will have a more complete presentation of the
progress
from the Oregon Progress Board, their benchmarks.
What? Some people who missed the last one.
I'm the only guy that's listened to that. I'm not making any of that twice.
It's for your benefit.
And we will also have a 5 to 10 minute presentation on the implementation of House Bill 3509 from the last session, which turned certain public debts over to private collection agents.
The aging official from staff is also going to be on Wednesday. We have a bill scheduled, I believe, also.
And we do have, I believe it's Senate Bill 193 scheduled, a constituent of Senator Gordley, an issue having to do with unemployment compensation insurance.
That's scheduled for public hearing, I believe?
Yes.
Okay. Just to let you know, Senator Gordley will be running the committee that day. I will not be able to attend, so.
Okay.
Anything else? We're adjourned.
Senator, would you bring those other bills into work session on?